The Minnesota Forest Resources Council is meeting in Grand Marais next week. The first time they've been here or met here in nearly 20 years. The council is a governor-appointed 17-member, very diverse organization that works to promote long-term sustainable management of Minnesota's forests. Joining us on the phone now is Dave Zometa, their executive director, and with us in the studio is our own Sean Parrish, who serves as an appointed member of the council. Dave and Sean, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
I guess both of you, but I'm going to direct the first part of this question at David. Before we get into the issues that you're dealing with here, I think it's necessary that we get a little background on what the council is and how it was formed and who's on it. In very general terms, Dave, can you give us that background?
Sure. The council was formed back in 1995 by the state legislature following a study of the impacts of timber harvesting and forest management across Minnesota. The $1 million study was conducted between 1990 and 1994, led to the formation of the council in 1995. And the council's existed for the past 19 years and has some statutory mandates in state law.
I read some of your material on the website. You have a very substantial website, actually, and we'll get that address out so folks can look at it. You've got a vision that talks about the integrity, preserving the integrity of the long-term ecosystem, sustaining healthy economics, and sustaining human communities. That's a pretty sometimes contradictory or conflicting group of visions. How do you make that work?
Well, we balance what the council's purpose, as stated in the act, is to pursue the sustainable management, use, protection of the state's forest resources to achieve the state's economic, environmental, and social goals. So sometimes those goals are compatible with one another, many times, and sometimes there are trade-offs, you know, between them. And that's really what the council's all about, is addressing those trade-offs with a diverse group of members, one of whom is Sean Parrish.
Sean, you are an appointed council member, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about how often you meet, what subcommittees there are, how you function as a committee member.
Yeah, I am a member representing game species and game fish and wildlife, I guess would be the simplest way to put it. So what I'm looking at as a council member a lot of times is, are what we doing in the woods right for fish and wildlife and fish and wildlife habitat? I serve on what is called the site level committee. And one of the great achievements of the Forest Resources Council was to develop timber harvesting guidelines that are very extensive. It's a thick, loose-leaf notebook of guidelines. They're all voluntary, but they're widely applied. They're voluntary for private landowners, but I think, public forest owners, such as the state, you know, Department of Natural Resources, and county land departments, really, it's the Bible of how they manage the woods and how loggers operate on the land.
So do they actually adopt your guidelines as part of their timber harvesting contracts sometimes?
Sometimes they do. Mm-hmm. Certainly the language will be in there in the contract that, that forest, MFRC guidelines apply, or I don't exactly know the contract language. Mm-hmm. But I think at the time the council was formed, there was a lot of concern that we were cutting too much too fast in the state. There was a lot of demand for aspen at the time, and there was a lot of harvesting going on. And I think what's happened over time, and I feel really confident about saying this, is I think we do a pretty darn good job of managing our forests in Minnesota, and I think we have a top-notch logging community in this state. I mean, people that really do take pride in their work and really do try to do the right thing on the ground. And I think that's most evident by the fact that forestry really isn't controversial at the moment in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. I think another really important thing about the council is that we've brought all these diverse interests together, from the environmental community to the timber industry and just about everything in between. And Minnesota is about the only state that's been able to pull that off. and some of the big controversies that have occurred in the Pacific Northwest, I mean, they look to Minnesota and go, how do you guys pull this off? Where you get everyone in the same room and sitting around the same table and hashing through these really difficult issues.
Yeah, we're talking really diverse. If you look on the website, which you can find at mn.gov/FRC, F as in forest, R as in resource, and C as in council, another front slash, and you'll link into all kinds of information on this, including the description of the 17, I think there's 17.
17,
correct.
17 members. Dave, can you speak to that? You've got a really diverse group of people that you are the executive director for. How do you get them together to find consensus and make a decision?
Well, it's a matter of keeping the focus on the council's mission, which is every one of the members, from whether they're a logger or an environmental person, has an interest in Minnesota's forest. And we try to keep the focus on the good of the people of the state relative to their forest, whether that's the environmental values that forests have or the economic uses of forests or the aesthetics and the kind of social considerations relative to forests. And I think the key to it is a mutual respect that people develop over time as they get to know each other and work together and meet together, and we try to cultivate that. It's a very diverse council geographically, people from the cities to Hovland, where Sean lives in Cook County, to Birchdale in the far northwest, over toward Bidette, and many other places in between, primarily from northern Minnesota, but not entirely. And then it's very tripartisan, I would say. We have council members who are Republicans, council members who are Democrats, council members who are something in between, and we just work together. You know, we work together on the common mission.
Sure, and sustainability has to be in the background for everybody to be thinking about, no matter what your interest is. Well, if I keep doing it this way, is it sustainable?
That's exactly right, and that, you know, the council's core statutory mission to advise the governor, federal, state, county, and local governments on sustainable forest resource policies and practices. So we focus on that.
Yeah, and Sean mentioned that the guidelines that his committee and the council developed for harvest best practices are voluntary. What authority do you have, if any, to impose any of your policies?
We're advisory. We don't have authority in the sense of regulatory authority. However, as Sean mentioned, not only the state and the counties, but also the Superior and Chippewa National Forests and just about every forest industry in the state use our guidelines when they harvest timber, do forest management. Mm-hmm. Some cases they might even exceed our guidelines on the standpoint of the Superior, certain cases with the
DNR. Do you have any of your members, are they Forest Service people?
Yes. Okay. Darla Lenz is the supervisor of the Chippewa National Forest, represents the federal government on our council, and her alternate is Brenda Halter, who's the supervisor of the Superior National Forest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you've got a meeting coming up here in Cook County. Sean, how often does your organization, how often does the council meet?
The council meets every other month, so six times per year.
Okay.
And our meetings are generally in places that are convenient, given our geographic distribution. So frequently we meet in Cloquet. If the legislature is in session, we meet in the Twin Cities usually, because a lot of the members are one way or another have to spend time in St. Paul, so they want to be, you know, mm-hmm. close to the cities. So usually a couple meetings out of the year in the Twin Cities, and then we may, one time this year, we met in Brainerd. So we move around.
So you persuaded them to come up to Grand Marais, did you, or?
I might have played a little role in that.
Sean deserved a break in terms of driving. Yeah. I thought it was high time to go to Grand Marais.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Not only that, but you made a nice connection with your meeting location and the tour you're going to be taking on the second day.
That's right.
We wanted to highlight. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we wanted to highlight the 100th anniversary of the Hedstrom Mill, which is a a very important employer in Grand Marais in Cook County, and that's a important milestone. And I'll let Sean speak to it. He's more knowledgeable of the details on that than me.
Yeah, I think probably most listeners here have heard plenty already about the 100th anniversary of Hedstrom, but it definitely is an important milestone. And having been involved through my company, Northern Wilds, with helping create the anniversary book, I have, as a lot of people in the county do, a deep appreciation for what the Hedstrom family has persevered and accomplished over 100 years. It's quite an achievement. I think another important thing about meeting in Grand Marais is our meeting location is at the North House Folk School. And were it not for healthy forests in Minnesota and in Cook County, North House Folk School would not exist either, because a whole lot of what happens at the Folk School involves forest products, whether it's building timber frames or wooden boats or using birch bark. I mean, it's all coming from the woods. And exactly that was right. A connection I tried to make, actually, when we decided to meet up here. I said, we've got to go to the Folk School because it is such an important part of forestry here.
Well, it's a great choice from our standpoint, too, I think. And so you're having your main business meeting on the 17th, I think.
Wednesday. Correct. Next Wednesday.
And then on the 18th, are you going to have this tour of Hedstrom's and so on, or is that?
Yeah, on the morning okay. of the 18th, correct.
Is your meeting open to the public by any chance?
Any meeting of the Forest Resources Council is open to the public, and we'll be meeting at the North House Folk School on Wednesday, September 17th, from 9:30 a.m. to 3 o'clock p.m., so people are more than welcome to attend, and we provide opportunity for public comments at the beginning and the end of each one of our meetings, and that will certainly be the case on the 17th.
Okay, for our listeners out there who may have just joined us, and we are speaking with Dave Zometa, who is the Executive Director of the Minnesota Forest Resources Council, and with Sean Parrish, who is from Hovland and here in Grand Marais, who serves as an appointed council member. Now we've got a good background on who you are and what you're doing. Let's talk a little bit about the plan that's coming out, the Northeast Landscape Forest Resources Plan. As I read now, that probably will be in final form and approved at your meeting this time?
That is correct. That's our hope, and I think that's likely. I don't make those decisions. The council members do, but they will be taking a formal vote on the revision of this plan that we've been working on for the last about 3 years. I think it was about 1997 through 2003, that's how long it took to develop the first landscape plan that was done in Minnesota, that is a long-range plan for how much forest, what kind of forest, how old should the forest be, across all ownerships, 7 to 8 million acres across Cook, Lake, St. Louis, and Carlton counties. And we thought it was time to update this plan. The Northeast Landscape Committee, that is a group of interests from across the northeastern part of Minnesota, unanimously recommended to our council that this plan be updated because it was about 10 years old. And we've taken several years to do that. It's controversial. You can imagine there's a lot of different interests, environmental interests, forest products industry, tourism industry, county, state, federal, tribal, all involved in the update of this plan. And I think we've successfully achieved what we're looking for in terms of incorporating more economic considerations into the plan than there was in the 2003 version, and also some climate change considerations into the plan, much more than there was in the 2003 version. And I think it's going to be a better plan as a result of that. But think generally acceptable to the Forest Service, the Nature Conservancy, the other environmental interests, the DNR, the counties, the tribes, and and the forest industries is, of course, extremely important.
And, and for listeners who want to see what that is, it's in total, it's on your website.
Yes, correct.
You can just Google Minnesota Forest Resources Council, and that's probably the easiest way to get in there. But then you'll see a copy of the draft plan there. It's many pages long and very detailed, and covers everything you might expect it to cover, including, you mentioned climate change. I want to just touch on a couple of the highlight issues that are out there. What's the impact of climate change, and how does your plan deal with it?
Well, there's concern that some of the what are sub-boreal species, in that's what the Canadians would call them anyway, that are very important in northeastern Minnesota, such as black spruce, are going to decline in the future, and that, you know, we need to plan accordingly in terms of what seems likely to happen is a reduction in the extent and volumes of some of those species. On the other hand, there's some opportunities. There's very likely to be more and a higher quality oak over time, and white pine is anticipated to do pretty well, you know, under future scenarios, hold its own or do better than that. And so, you know, there's some opportunities for restoration of white pine in some places where we don't have very much of it.
And I was interested in some of the positive impacts that you can that forest has on preventing or slowing down climate change and this business of carbon sequestration.
Yes. Our forests play a very crucial role globally, actually. But particularly the boreal forests are incredibly important across Canada, across northern Minnesota and the UP of Michigan and northern Wisconsin, like I say, what the Canadians would call the sub-boreal forest. And then also across Siberia and Finland and Sweden and Norway, you know, just vast expanses of forests. And these forests are critically important relative to sequestering carbon and helping ameliorate impacts of climate change.
So is the key to that then, if you harvest the trees, you got to replant?
Replant, the key is to retain the land in forest, because, you know, the trees will grow back, and in many cases you don't even need to plant.
Sure.
Like if it's aspen, you know, it just grows back on its own.
And I noticed there are some conflicts with potentially with potato farmers, or not, I'm not blaming the farmers, but the agricultural use of forest land.
There are, and we had a council meeting recently where we addressed where that issue was addressed and brought to the attention of our council members, in terms of that's more focused in west central Minnesota, but an important issue and some really important considerations to balance in terms of the economy and the environment.
And maybe Sean, you can comment on invasive insects or species. Yeah, insects, I guess, is the main issue with forests.
In our part of the state, I think it would be primarily insects. Certainly, there's some plants as well that are invasive species. But one that's been in the news primarily recently has been the gypsy moth, which has established a foothold here on the North Shore, and has, you know, the potential to do damage to the forest in the future. Hasn't occurred yet. Also, the emerald ash borer, which has started further east than Minnesota, but has marched its way into Minnesota. Anyone that's familiar with the woods here knows what a black ash swamp is, and we've got lots and lots of ribbons of black ash throughout our forests in northern Minnesota. And there's a real concern that if the emerald ash borer gets into northern Minnesota, we could lose those ash forests pretty doggone quickly. And I really don't know what would replace ash. It doesn't really seem like anything else grows in a black ash sand.
Yep. Well, are there any other issues that you'd like to call to our attention now that are identified in your forest plan that we haven't touched on that are significant?
Water quality.
The one would be the the challenges that our forest products industry faces in terms of global competition. That's a major concern relative to the economy in northeastern Minnesota, of course, across much of Minnesota. And the commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, Commissioner Landwehr, asked us to convene a high-level steering committee of forest industry executives to look at the evaluate the global competitiveness of Minnesota's primary forest products industry, which is the pulp and paper companies and the board plants and the sawmills like Hedstrom's, and how do we stack up against other states, other countries around the world. So we are doing that and going to report back to the commissioner and quite a number of other commissioners and the governor by December 1 on our findings. And it's updating some work that we did back in 2003, 2006, 2007 for former Governor Pawlenty. This is a very important consideration relative to all the jobs that are dependent on our, on the forest industry. 30,000 jobs across Minnesota, good-paying jobs. Very, very important to the economy.
Sean chimed in on water quality is an issue that gets addressed. What is that?
Well, one of the rancorous issues that we've dealt with over time is how do we harvest timber near bodies of water or near streams and wetlands? And we've developed guidelines that basically keep harvest a certain distance away from the water. Depending on what the water source is, it may be less or further. And it may be the time of year that you harvest. I mean, you can go into a black spruce swamp in the winter when it's frozen and not really do any damage to the swamp and be able to take the product out. But I think another aspect of it that I think in northern Minnesota we just take for granted because we have such high quality water is the reason we have high quality water is because we're primarily forested. We don't get the sort of pollutants and nutrients that they get in, the farming regions
right,
of Minnesota.
That's one of the issues with converting forest land to farming
is the water quality. Also, because we have riparian guidelines, I mean, I'm always stunned when I'm driving across the farming regions of the state and, you see a plowed field going right down to the stream. I mean, that just doesn't happen in our part of the state. Mm-hmm. It's not allowed. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's a cultural difference. Nobody wants to do that in our part of the state. Another thing, to go back to what Dave was talking about, global competitiveness, a former council member once said, and it really opened my eyes, that in order to have healthy forests, you need to have a healthy forest products industry because you have to have a demand for those various tree species in order for someone to care enough to manage them. And you have to, if you don't have that demand, who's really going to care about if we do a good job managing our forests? And you can extend that all the way to places like North House Folk School, which has a demand for certain forest products, whether it's old growth pine for building timber frames or, again, birch bark. Mm-hmm. If we don't have that demand and someone saying, I want that product out of the forest, there's no need to manage for it. Well, and not do so is kind of frightening to think about.
It is, and the discussion has been very interesting, gentlemen. I appreciate very much having you here. And obviously, we can't even touch all the subjects you deal with. In your website is just chock full of information on all of these issues and many more. So I guess we'll have to end it at this point here, but if folks want to follow along a little more, they're welcome to come to your meeting on September 17th at North House Folk School, starting at 9 in the morning?
9:30.
Okay. And thank both of you, Dave and Sean, for joining us here on the Roadhouse today.